Okay, next question was an anonymous question.
Hey, Jeff, this is Brandon Fredrickson.
Hey, how you doing, Brandon?
Oh, I think I got myself kind of in over my head, and I'm a little scared. I've been doing a launch for Tim, and it's going really well. And so he was actually talking to Eddie Kwong, who's the publisher of Trading Markets.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, probably other than like TheStreet.com and CBS MarketWatch, the biggest site in the, you know, the active trading niche.
Yep.
So I was talking to Eddie about what I'm doing with Tim and the results that I've already gotten for Tim, and was talking to him about how they do their launches and when they're putting out a big product. And they really, their whole process with it is that they kind of put a banner up on their site and don't really draw any attention to it. And then when the product is out, they'll send, you know, three or four emails that we've got this new product out. And then when they do a new product, they usually make about $300,000 to $500,000 on it just with that rather miserable product launch.
Yeah.
Approach.
Yeah. So do and for real, so, they could do.
And so Eddie asked me, he says, well, can you do one for us? And I said, well, of course I can. And, I mean, you know, it's a huge, huge company.
Right.
And they've never done JV stuff, but they're willing to. But I guess what my question is when I do the first one from them, you know, I'm in a mastermind group with Chris Brisson and Chris Haddad, but they're both on vacation right now. And I guess I just wonder when I'm managing that launch for them, and I'm wanting to do it at the end of the summer because, as you know,
yep.
in the trading industry, in the summer, your conversions are like half of what they would be
right.
If you
yep.
just wait until September or October to do it.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm pretty sure just that we could do, you know, Chris thought that we could easily do several million dollars for them.
Yeah,
But, and they've already paid me a decent retainer and everything to get stuff going, so... But I want to know if I should kind of concentrate on doing JVs and stuff for them, or should I just, with the first launch that we do, would you kind of just focus on their own internal list and stuff?
I'd probably focus it internally. I mean, it sounds like they don't have that much in the way of JV relationships.
Yeah.
And so adding that into the mix would make it a lot more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, one of the biggest issues you're going to have with them is making sure that, you know, they – sort of, they jump when you say jump.
Right.
You know that they aren't going to be second guessing you. That's.
I know I've got a good relationship with them because I used to have a product with them,
mm-hmm.
and okay. And my product used to do about $500,000-$600,000 a year,
mm-hmm.
and so they know that I'm not. You know, I mean, they know if I say something that I'm not just kind of talking out of the backside of my body.
Yep.
And
yep.
so I think that they'll follow through and trust me with this stuff. But
yeah. Yeah, I'd go internal first, and then okay. And then external. It's a lower risk that way, and you can control.
Yeah.
I personally love internal launches. I mean, external multi-million-dollar launches are awesome, but the sheer elegance you can have in an internal launch is just it's beautiful because basically you control the message and you control every piece of the message and you can make sure that everyone sees every piece.
Mm-hmm.
So I personally, you make less money with them, but they're so beautiful. And then you can always just, with JVs, you end up just, you know, pushing the replay button.
Yeah, and I mean, they have over 1.5 million people on their email list anyway.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
If you can't pull, I would think if they're doing 300 to 400 without doing a launch, I mean, they should be able to do a couple million easily with a launch. So.
Yeah, well, Chris said if we couldn't do 1 million for them, we should be shot in the back of the head.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
I don't want to be shot in the back of the head.
Brandon, are you coming to the Product Launch Manager training?
I'm hoping to. I have to still. I'm still infectious.
Oh, okay.
Which because I've got the I've got a MRSA and a strep infection in my leg, and so it was as a result of the cancer that is now in remission. But the last surgery I had when I had cancer, they had to take the lymph node out of my groin.
Oh.
And when that happened, I ended up getting MRSA and strep in my leg. I was in the hospital for over 100 days with it.
Wow.
And the infection still hasn't cleared up. So I'd actually planned on going to Jeff Johnson's event, but I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, well, you know, if you go to Detroit and you get really sick there, of course, the hospital in Detroit is going to treat you the same as the hospital here would. But it's just that everybody else on the airplane and everybody else around you might appreciate you're not attending.
Yeah.
And so and he said it's getting very close. I've only got just a very small area with
uh-huh.
the open wound. But you know, if that's closed up, I definitely plan to attend.
Yeah.
And if it's open, then I probably won't. And I'd like to go out there because I, you know, Chad Morris. Really?
No.
He gave you and your son a ride and
Yeah.
Chad was my best friend in high school.
Oh, cool.
And I actually want to go out and stay with him for, you know, for a couple of weeks. And so I'm trying to kind of coordinate that around that time if I'm all healed up. And like I said, then I'll just stay out there with Chad for a week or two as well.
Cool. Well, hopefully, you know, it works out and you can make it because this is going to be the perfect thing for you.
Okay.
Cool.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I actually am really, really looking forward to it because this is kind of the direction that I've started to take everything in. I mean, I kind of got healthy and needed to start doing stuff. I mean, my medical situation right now, I'm still getting the IVs and whatnot. So when I had cancer, my insurance ran out, and I went through my savings. But so I have to come up with $3,800 a week to pay the home health care people. And I've been able to do it just doing basic stuff for people. I mean, I'll go to a site that is doing, you know, maybe 15, 20 grand a month, and they've got somebody that's really, really well known, but their marketing is horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And I just tell them, hey, I'll fix your marketing, and if I fix it, will you pay me? And, you know, it's, for me, much more enjoyable than creating my own products and interacting with a lot of people, which I did for a long time.
Right.
And so I'm really liking this process because I'm working with professionals that actually follow through.
Yep.
And do stuff, and it's, you know, it's turning out pretty well, and I've, you know, been able to keep some medical bills paid and all that good stuff. So
well, and it's so easy, you know, as you're seeing, it's so easy to find these people that need help. I mean, you were able to walk into trading markets, and I mean, I'm very familiar with trading markets. You know, I remember when they started actually back in the 90s.
Yeah.
You know, for the people that aren't familiar with the stock market sites, I mean, this is like one of the top two or three sites there is with a million person list. And when they just release a product and not even do a launch, they're doing $300,000. And now you're able to go in there and basically show them how to do a launch where, golly, you know, yeah, if, like Chris said, if you can't do a million, I think it's a slam dunk $2 million launch. And then to get a piece of that, you know, I mean,
and they've offered me a third of anything over $500,000.
Oh my gosh! So if you do $2 million, that's $500,000 you're going to make.
Yeah. So it was actually not very hard. I mean, I went to Tim, and he was really, really frustrated because out of, you know, there's 25,000 people on Covestor that are tracked, and he's number one, and he was only making about $25,000 or $30,000 a month off of his website. And I told him that I'd help him get up to 50. And if I didn't get him up to 50, he didn't have to pay me. And if I got him up to 50, then he could just pay me whatever he thought was fair.
Mm-hmm.
And I've known Tim, so I knew he wasn't going to screw me. I knew when I told him to pay me what he thought was fair, he would give me a fair amount.
Mm-hmm.
So when I did that, I mean, just last month, we did $89,000. And I've only been working with Tim for about 3 months. And we're on track to do about $120,000 this month, and we have a launch actually in sequence that's going to happen on June 6th. So Eddie was watching this kind of launch sequence that Tim was doing, and he actually called Tim and said to Tim, hey, you know, this is, you know, what you're doing is really cool. What the heck are you doing? Would you mind telling us a little bit about it? And Tim said, well, I don't really know. I'm just doing what Brandon tells me to do. And then Eddie said, you know, Brandon, who? And he said, Brandon Fredrickson. And he says, well, this, isn't he sick? Didn't he die? And said, no, he made it. He's still around. And so Eddie called me and just said, hey, you know, could you, you know, he wanted to know a little bit about it and then just asked if I'd be willing to do one for them.
Hmm. That's awesome.
So,
awesome.
No, I mean, it's a lot easier than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Because I thought I'd kind of get, you know, have to do some really, really small ones first.
Right.
And, I mean, I kind of maybe lucked out compared to the average person because I've known these people since, you know, 1997, 1998.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm kind of leveraging a little bit with the contacts I already have, but I haven't talked to them for like 4 years.
Mm.
And so, yeah, I mean, it's, like I said, it's easier than I thought it would be in terms of getting the clients. I've got, you know, a real estate site that I'm getting ready to do. I don't know, like I said, Tim, And then now the trading market's banging, so it's
sweet.
Not too hard. So thank you so much, Jeff.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, I hope you can make, you know, hope you get healed soon, and I hope you can make the training because it's
cool. I'll be there if I'm healed up.
Awesome.
So.
Okay.
Thanks,
good
Jeff.
Thank you, Brandon. Bye-bye. Okay, next question. Blue?
Hello?
Hi.
Hello?
Hi. Yep, go on.
This is Johnny, Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
Hi. Actually, I have some quick questions. So I'm trying to do a seed launch, right? And the problem that I have is, okay, or maybe I'm confused. I'm actually building a list, already have like 400 people in there, based on pay-per-click. But the problem that I have is, okay, I'm asking directly through the autoresponder, right? I am asking the questions to these new people about, you know, if they have any two or three burning questions, you know, to ask. Actually, I'm on the Forex market, no, mm-hmm. Foreign exchange market.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, before, what I was doing is that I attended these people then into my autoresponder series, right? I created a 6 days autoresponder series offering a bonus of a product that I am an affiliate of, right?
Yep.
Okay. So the thing is, I don't know if I offer the bonus to my list, right? What will be better, to ask questions, you know, about ask questions to this list about what are their needs first, or to sell them first?
Generally, you know, I like to ask them the questions first, because to me, getting the marketing data is more valuable than getting, in the long run, is more valuable than getting sales. And it's not like you have to keep on asking, you know, you don't have to keep the survey open forever. You just need, you know, whatever, 50, 100, 150 responses, and then you're going to know. It's not like, you know, the people answering it next month are going to be different. They're going to give you different answers than the people this month. So just, you know, it's important to get the data and get the pulse of the market and figure out what's going on. So I would send them to the survey first. You can always change it around later on.
And you know, piggybacking on that question, okay, I survey the list first, you know, while I'm building it, before selling them something. Then how do I know which questions should be, because I'm trying to ask them questions to create content for my blog, right? I just, you know, recently, you know, have a WordPress blog, you know, following your suggestions on list building 101 and 102.
So Johnny, I need to ask, we're getting way behind here. So just the question is what, I mean, basically you want to be looking at the things that they ask the most often. You know, the things that keep on coming up over and over are the things that are most important for them. So, I mean, every time I've done a survey, you know, I can usually look at 20 or 30 responses, and I know what the top two or three hot points are. It's they'll stick out like a sore thumb. And so you're just looking for those top two or three hot points, and, you know, and then you're golden.
Yeah, but should I use that those questions as a content for my blog or to create a product?
Both.
Both?
Yeah. If it's a question that you can answer in a 300-word blog post, then you're not going to create a product out of that. I mean, you should be able to answer it talk about it in a blog post that's, you know, 300 or 400 words. But and then, you know, if there's meat for an entire product, then you're not going to be able to give away the farm in a blog post. So yeah, you could do both.
Okay, I understand. And
okay,
after
I gotta get the next question here. We're just running way behind here. So
okay,
so
thank you very much, Jeff.
Yep. Okay, next question.
Hey, Jeff. How's it going?
Good.
Good, good, good. This is Andrew from Utah. How are you? Back again. So I have a quick question on just surveying the market before you have a list. I've got a different project than the one we talked about last time with. I have access to about 70 different authors, speakers, coaches, people like Brian Tracy, T. Harv Eker, those kind of guys. And I would like to build a list for each one to do a series of ask campaigns with, like, with a teleseminar.
Okay.
Do you have any input on surveying a market before you have a list, just off of pay-per-click or even an e-zine drop or something like that with a solo adder?
Yeah. I think what you need to do is, oh boy, all of a sudden I start to pick up an echo. If you're going to do a pay-per-click, try to get them. And Andrew, I'm going to have to mute you because we're just having some serious problems here with feedback. Okay, so I think really what you, if you're going to do off pay-per-click, I would go for the opt-in. So I'd bring them to the site, make them an offer of something cool, get them to opt in, and then ask them to take the survey. Or alternatively, check that. If you just drop them on the page and have the survey built right in, and it was like, you know, we're going to do this teleseminar, we're going to do this webinar, we're creating this report, I really want to know what your top questions are, and have it built right into the form there. Just type in your top question and hit the enter button, and then after that, then pop up with an opt-in form. So that'd probably be the best. So drop them directly onto the survey, sell them on taking the survey and why you really need the information. Tell them you're going to give them the results of the survey, and you're going to give them some other content if they fill it out. Ask them to fill it out, and then the thank you page from that survey would be an opt-in form. So that'd be the way I do it off of pay-per-click. Okay, next question. We got two more questions here.
Jeff?
Yes.
Hi, Jeff. Joel Helfer from Northbrook. Good afternoon.
Hey, how are you doing, Joel?
I'm doing fine, thank you. About 10 days ago, I decided to use e-zine articles as a way of determining what different topics people would be interested in the niche I'm in. I'm in the coupon advertising, and I sat down and I cranked out about 300 or 400 word articles on different topics. And I got about, in a 10-day period, I got about 1,100 views. And I don't know how many people actually read the articles, but I got enough views to determine about 6 or 8 topics that people are really interested in, because there was a great disparity in the number of people who looked at one article versus another article.
Okay.
And now I have enough information to create an information product. I set up a squeeze page, a nice thank you page, an autoresponder. But the problem I'm having is I'm building a new website, and I run into a situation where I have two competing business opportunities. One is I can create some information products on how to save money with coupons. But the other thing is I have a local business where I sell advertising on two different websites, and I can't seem to figure out which one I should start with first. Should I start with the information products, or should I continue on trying to sell advertising to people on the website using these information products as kind of a free bonus offer, or should I do both at the same time, or should I have two different websites? I'm really having trouble figuring out where to go from here.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, Joel, you know this, that you can't sell two things at once. No one can sell two things at once. You know, if you're going in to make a sales presentation, you can't sell two things. So I would think that they would have to be different sites. They'd have to be tuned. You know, they're different products. They're going to have to be on sites that are tuned for that sale. In terms of which to do first, you know, so much that goes into that decision. I would go for generally, you know, the low hanging fruit, like where's the easy money, and you know, you're just going to make a call on that. And you know, there's all kinds of other factors. You know, which one are you going to enjoy most? Which is, you know, better strategically? Which is going to set you up? Yada yada yada. But I mean, you just have to make a gut feel on where's the low hanging fruit. But I would definitely split out the sales processes
because the information product seems to be easier for me to create.
There you go. Yeah.
There's less selling involved in it.
Yep. Yeah, I think you just answered your own question.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Joel.
Have a good day.
You too. Okay, we got one more here.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, hey, Jeff. It's Jeff from over here in Arkansas.
Hey, Jeff.
I had a question. I kind of wanted to share my vision with the product I'm trying to create. I basically have a niche that's pretty blown up. You know, there's quite a few people creating products. There's a decent amount of teleseminars going on, you know, just throughout the year. I do have kind of a unique access to kind of one of the older known experts
mm-hmm.
in the field. I don't have like a big list myself, so I kind of have this personal relationship with one of the experts. So what I'm hoping to do is to work with his list and, you know, just do a JV thing and basically launch a sort of a coaching program where I bring in different experts, you know, like every other month, and I'll create a membership site where the participants can actually engage, kind of similar to what you're doing, like do a weekly call, but set up an expert for 1 month and have the community, you know, interact and give them certain things, you know, give them things to do, forums and such and that kind of thing. But my question really is with sort of engaging that list, like kind of the first thing off. So the shot across the bow, I'm not necessarily doing that. I mean, the shot across the bow, am I getting this right, is essentially the kind of the question, the survey thing?
It can be. It's basically letting them know something's coming without, like, overtly pitching them.
Right. And, I mean, that's kind of another thing that I've kind of had an issue grappling with is that, you know, should I just go right off the bat and tell them that we're going to do this teleseminar with this specific expert? Because otherwise I don't know how to really kind of capture their interest.
Right. So has this expert done many teleseminars before or recently?
You know, he's probably 30 years in the field. So I don't really know his whole past, but recently he has not. He's kind of sabbaticaled out and not really an active list.
So that's perfect because that means coming out now, you know, he's decided to get back into the game. You know, probably don't want to use those words with the list, but, you know, for some reason he's reinvigorated and, you know, and he's excited about new developments or something along that lines. And, you know, he's decided what better way to come back into the market. You know, none of this is good copy that I'm speaking, but this is sort of the theme behind it. The story you're going to tell is, you know, for whatever reason, he decided to come back to the market, and he's going to do a teleseminar, and the really cool thing is it's completely free, and you're invited. And, you know, as a lead into this, you know, you want to collect, you know, you want to know what's on people's minds, so go here and fill out this form and tell me what you want to know.
Right.
I think just doing that, it's pretty easy with that type of message to warm up a list and to get people invigorated and excited. And then the beautiful thing is if you're going to go forward doing teleseminars with other experts, you know, you created the modality and you get people used to the modality using your expert, and this will work. It will work. This is ground that's been plowed in many different niches, and it does work.
Thanks for that confidence. I really appreciate your product. It's an amazing insight for me. So kind of on that vein, my mode of action would be to give him an email to send his crew and essentially send them to a web page where I'm I'm sort of telling them about this, you know,
yep.
event going to come up. And
I do the telling in the email, sort of, you know, the email's a more personal thing. So I do the telling in the email and say, you know, one of the things you could do for me, just, you know, we just really want to know, you know, since we've been out of the market, we really want to know what's on people's minds. If you can just go and tell us, you know, if you could just, you know, sit down with me, you know, the expert, if you could sit down with me and have a coffee with me, would be the number one question you would ask me. So if you could just click on this link and tell me what your top question would be, I'd really appreciate it.
Right. And then I basically have essentially after that, it would be kind of building the sub list. That'd be the next order.
Yeah. Although I think you could go out to your main list with this. I think it's basically you send them the survey, and it's like then the next email is, wow, you know, we're really excited. We got lots of great feedback. You know, we're putting together the whole agenda and listing all these questions, and it's going to be really exciting. In fact, the call is going to be coming up on, you know, June 15th, and we'll be sending you, you know, you could either be, we'll be sending you further details on this and then just send the access details to the whole call. Or at that point you could say, you know, to get the details, you know, go here, and then you would send them to a squeeze page to opt in for the thing. You could go either way. You know, you are going to end up sending, you know, if you do a teleseminar, you're going to, it's like I was talking to Billy at the beginning of the call, you're going to send them a reminder an hour before and 24 hours before and 72 hours before and a week before. So you're going to send, you know, at least three or four reminders over, you know, a couple of weeks. So you got to think, well, is that going to irritate the list? You know, is the list used to just getting like one email every 3 or 4 months? Or do they get stuff regularly? If they get stuff regularly, that's probably not too much.
One thing I also kind of wanted to do with this product is actually make the teleseminar part of the product. So I don't know that, I mean, should I do just kind of a kickoff teleseminar that's kind of like a teaser, like, you know, hey, you know, that actually is sort of the start of the launch, and then do the more in-depth sort of, because it's going to be kind of like a coaching club where, you $100 and you get a month.
I'd put them on there. You could literally put them on there, give them great content, and pitch them right from this thing. Or, you know, you could do, I mean, that's typically the way you would do it, is you would put them on the call, and at the end of the call, pitch them on, you know, this is just the first call. We got another caller coming up with this expert, but we've also got this expert, and this expert lined up, and it's going to be really cool. And, you know, if you buy right now, then you can get the special deal.
Okay. All right. Great help. Appreciate your help.
Oh, you're welcome.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now I'm just going to go to, let's see. We're going to head on over and get some of the questions that were submitted on our handy-dandy PowerPoint. We've got I got to crank through here. We got about 9 minutes left, and I got to be off the phone. So here we go. First, and this is for the people viewing at home, you can see I'm going through the PowerPoint now. How do you feel about getting testimonials using a launch with money back or a big discount for providing feedback and hopefully some testimonials? I don't offer incentives for doing surveys. I don't offer incentives for testimonials. You really have to be careful offering any type of anything for testimonials. I mean, you can offer it for feedback, but you got to be really careful with the legalities there, and the legalities are going to get tighter as we go forward. I mean, right now, people are, you know, the FTC is cutting down on blogs that are taking, you know, paid endorsements and not disclosing it. So this whole area is getting a lot more tighter, the actual laws. And, of course, I am not a lawyer, so don't take legal advice from me. But I just don't think you normally need to give money or a big discount to get feedback or to get testimonials. If you do, I'm just wondering if you got the right product or the right marketing. I'm not against coming out with a product and saying, you know, releasing it at a lower price, and the reason why is that, you know, we just need to get this out there because we need to get it in people's hands, and we really hope that the people buying early on will, give us their feedback, good, bad, or indifferent. You know, something along that lines is fine. You know, is a reason why to do a limited opening. That's all good. You know, the reason why is we need to get this out there to get feedback. And even theoretically, even saying, you know, we're doing this limited pre-open. We've only got, 50 of these available. We've got some extra cool bonuses and an extra discount. You know, the only thing is, you know, we really want you to give a feedback, so please don't buy this thing unless you're willing to give us some feedback. It doesn't have to be good feedback. It could be good, bad, and different. It doesn't matter. We really want your feedback. So something along that lines is good. But in general, I don't like giving money back or a discount to get feedback, both from a legal standpoint but also a positioning standpoint. I just don't think you need to do it generally. Next question. I just started my shot across the bow survey as part of my internal launch for our transformational Twitter product. I'm impressed by the number of folks who have already responded with great questions. I'll wrap up the launch in mid-June. My question, as soon as the internal launch is over, I'm turning right around with a JV launch for the same product. I have two people with huge lists and a bunch of folks with smaller lists. At what point do I enter them into my launch process? If it's the survey, how does a list owner hand over their customers to me, the Twitter expert? See you in LA in July. My internal launch will cover the cost of your certified product launch manager training. I'm so there. Thanks for everything. That's from Alan Davidson. Okay, generally, you just hit replay is how you do it with the JVs. You just hit replay, but you don't start with the survey. That's just not a good thing for partners to mail on. So you have they can mail on some other pre-launch content, and after they join your list, after, you know, they go through, say, a squeeze page and join your list, then you can survey them, but don't have them mail directly to a survey. And so they don't hand over their lists. Basically, you create good pre-launch content, and then you have them mail to the pre-launch content, and you put up some type of a squeeze page. Either that, or sometimes you might be able to get a partner that will agree to mail to all of your steps, but that's very, very rare. In general, what you do is you try to get them to mail once or twice or three times, and each time you're trying to squeeze people onto your list, and then you're following up to those people to close the sale, to take them through the steps of the launch. Okay, next question. Jeff, do you outsource? I know you said you didn't used to. It just seems overwhelming to get all this out of the blocks, swimming in a sea of to-do details, and I'm a little slowy when not sure how to do them, and I have to learn that step too. Okay, so I outsource certain things. And then there's a whole slippery slope, not even slippery slope, but I mean, there's this continuum between what is outsourcing? Like, is that if it's someone that's a contractor or if someone's an employee or someone's like a contractor that works sort of a lot for you or whatever? I don't outsource any of my content creation. I've never done that. I might do it in the future, but up to this point, I have not outsourced any product creation. A perfectionist. So I do outsource tech stuff. I outsource graphic stuff. I outsource transcription stuff. So those are all good things to outsource. You know, it could be, you know, I've got Betty. Betty happens to be like the world's greatest customer service person. But, you know, I know a lot of people will outsource customer service or some portion of customer service. And for me, when I started out, I had no money. I couldn't outsource. I just had to do everything, every last little thing. If I didn't know how to do it, I'd figure it out because I had no money. Now, a lot of people are not quite as destitute as I was when I was starting out, so you can afford to outsource. So, I mean, I definitely think outsourcing is a good thing to do, especially like those things I talked about. I've got no graphic skills, so of course I outsource that stuff. I'm certainly not going to transcribe my calls. There's people that know how to do that a lot better than I do. You know, the technical stuff, I've got Paul Galloway doing that stuff for me. So I do outsource stuff. The one thing I haven't done yet, and I haven't done yet, is outsourcing content creation because I am a perfectionist about that stuff. So don't feel bad about outsourcing, and, you know, especially if you've got the money. You got to look at how much money you're making or you're intending to make, and then if you can hire someone, I mean, you know, graphics, like I couldn't do graphics, good graphics to save my life, you know. But there's some things, like, you know, some of the, like video. I just, like, I could edit video, okay? Not great, but I can edit video, but I just paid someone to edit, you know, to create my video and edit video because he can do it a lot better than I can. And if you look at how much money my business is pulling in, I could hire someone to do those videos for much less than, you know, what my hourly rate is. And so, you know, you also have to do that kind of math. Okay, next slide. What's the best way to get someone from your blog to your squeeze page? Do you continually mention the free report in your blog, or should you have links to the squeeze page as part of your signature? Is the squeeze page on a separate website, or is it the same website? Yeah, it could be just another page on your same website. Yes, you do mention it several times in your blog copy. You can put up links on your blog copy, but then you can also do one of those fancy DHTML pop-ups. That's just it's included with AWeber. It's included with ProFollow. If you go and get signed up there, it's just one of the subscription boxes. It's basically a pop-up, an unblockable pop-up that you can put on your blog. You can actually do the light box effect where, like, the blog actually dims out in the background, and you just have, see this box that's lit up in the middle. And those are really effective for getting people to opt in and from your blogs. Okay, let's see. Next one. From Emma in Illinois, from Palatine in Illinois. My launch is a career coaching program for nurses. What kind of contests would you suggest that I run during the pre-launch period? I am planning a 20-day launch that may run through the week of July, 4th of July. What would you think? What kind of headline would you suggest? Okay, so first of all, contest, you don't have to do a contest, excuse me, but the easiest contest is just that you're going to give away, you know, whatever your coaching program is, you're going to give away one seat in your coaching program. And it doesn't have to be you're going to coach this person forever, but, you know, you're going to coach them for some period of time or whatever. It doesn't have to be one of, just whatever you're selling is an easy thing to give away, and the contest is real simple. It's just like, you know, tell me why you need this program and how it's going to change your life. And it's that simple. 28-day launch is a long launch. That's very, very long to keep people involved, especially with your first launch. Remember, you don't want to be boring. You don't want people to forget what's going on. So you might want to compress that 28 days down into, you know, 10 to 14 days. Give 3 or 4 solid pieces of content and get people really involved. The launch may run through the week of the 4th of July. If the pre-launch can go through that, but I don't know if I would actually do, you know, I don't know if I would open the cart on July 2nd and close it on, you know, July 8th and run through the 4th weekend. You know, pre-launch running through the 4th weekend isn't a bad thing, but things will probably slow down for you over that weekend. It's a big holiday here in the States. I wouldn't do the actual launch through the 4th, but I'd probably do the pre-launch through the 4th. Next question from Lumi. Hi, Jeff. In Module 3, you talk about multiple modalities such as email, video, blogs, etc. How do you incorporate the new modalities such as Facebook and Twitter into your launches? It seems that people are really using these now a lot. Let me see. What I view Facebook and Twitter as is ways to feed into your launch. So I would be feeding Twitter and Facebook into the launch list. And hold on for just a sec here. I just got a correction. It's Ayumi. Is how to pronounce the name. Sorry about that. Okay, so Twitter and Facebook, use those to send people into your pre-launch content and to interact about the pre-launch content. So if you have people following you on Facebook, just put up a status there that's like, hey, I just loaded my new video. Check it out. Let me know what you think. And same thing on Twitter. And, you know, think of the people on Facebook and Twitter as being a little more rabid. You can often do a shot across the bow there that, hey, I'm working on a new video. This is going to be really cool. This is what it's going to be about. Go check out my new video. I haven't released it yet. Let me know what you think. And, you know, so that's the way I use that. I use it just to be a little more interactive. Maybe your raving fans are there. Send them, you know, give them early peeks into your pre-launch content. Get a conversation going about your pre-launch content. Get them talking about it, asking you questions. But don't depend on that. Like, you're not sending people over to Facebook or Twitter from your launch. You're using Facebook and Twitter to send people to your pre-launch stuff. Okay, next question. We're going to take this one and one more. Okay, from Den in London. Hi, Jeff. We're now in pre-launch, and with a one-page squeeze, we have had 237 opt-ins in less than a week using Twitter. That's awesome. We're outsourcing some web development to a guy we've known and worked with for 18 months on a blog. But I'm concerned that when we launch, he may feel aggrieved when we launch and large sums of cash start to flow in. How can we protect our intellectual property from the web developer when the web developer holds the key to our website, logins, etc.? Are there any contracts that you recommend we put in place before we begin generating revenue? Money has a habit of turning people from nice, friendly, helpful partners into, I deserve a bigger piece of the pie. Any help gratefully received? Thanks for the great work you do. Okay, then, this is it's a little weird. You know, web developers, you usually pay them per project or per hour to develop your website. And for the most part, the web developers I know, you know, they're you know, more of the employee mentality where, you know, you just pay me to do this job, I'm going to do the job. And, you know, you should be holding the keys. He may have logins, but you've got the logins as well, and you can lock them out at any point. But really, I've never seen anyone get upset like this. In this situation. And I mean, if you're really concerned, you could just say, hey, you know, we're about to do this thing and we're expecting to do really, really well. And kick them, you know, 1% of the launch or something like that. I mean, if you're really concerned, but the reality, I mean, it should be your intellectual property. And you know, this is sort of out of the realm of anything I'm used to dealing with. I mean, my web developer, my tech people, they know, you know, we've got an agreement. I pay them X number of dollars. And actually, sometimes I do cut people in. But, you know, that's agreed to beforehand. It isn't like all of a sudden they're seeing me make a lot of money and now let's change the rules. But, you know, in the long run, you got to get out of this where someone else is holding the keys. You have to hold the keys. Even if, in other words, you hold the master login and password and you can change that at any time. That's essential. You hold the master login and password for your domain name, you know, wherever you're hosting your domain names or managing your domain names through, wherever you're hosting your websites through, you got to control that stuff. And it's probably better to get that stuff moved over now rather than later once the dollars start to grow. And now one more question here. Another question from London, from Leo in London. After 3 months of losses and 3 months of profitability, we have a website with a list of 500 prospects and 100 customers. Our list is growing at a rate of 40 a day. That's awesome. That's more than 1,000 a month. With about 4 of these being customers, and that number is accelerating. This is awesome. Good news. Our products are consumable, so a customer has a lifetime value. We are starting our pre-launch with a request to take a survey. Then we plan a 6-week countdown to launch. Exactly when should our product launch web page go up? Does the web page content change as we get closer to the launch? Six weeks is too long for a launch. Like I was saying, earlier on that 28-day launch. I think 28 days is, for most people, is too long. I mean, I pulled off a 28-day launch, but you know, I've been doing this a long time, and I have had a lot of great content. Most people, you're going to have a hard time maintaining the market's interest and attention for 6 weeks. That's going to be really hard to do. So I would carve that down quite a bit. You know, maybe the first 3 weeks could be way pre-launch, where you're just warming the list with cool stuff and you're not even talking about your launch. But, you know, once you get into that launch, 10, 14, max 21 days. Exactly when should our product launch web page? It depends. I'm not sure exactly what you mean by the product launch web page. But I would start with content. You're putting out content. I'd start that, you know, 14 days out. And I'd use three pieces of content. I'd put each on a separate page. So, you know, probably not your home page, but, you know, send them to content page one. So it's content page one.html. You know, probably name it something else. Name it something cool. But, you know, put up that content page and send people to that. Leave it up because it's going to take people. Not everyone will click through on the day you email on it. And then, you know, 5 or 6 days later, you send up, put out your next piece of content. Then 3 or 4 days later, you put out your next piece of content. And then as you're getting within 3 to 5 days of the launch, then you really start focusing on the product, tell them about the product, maybe put out a video, an audio, a teleseminar about the product. Focus on that product in the last few days, you know, send people to the blog to make comments, to get them engaged there, answer common questions, common objections on the blog, and you should be fine. Okay, so we're going to have to wrap up the call now. Sorry for the little bit of a rough start at the beginning, but we got to a lot of great questions. I think we covered a lot of great ground here, and that'll wrap it up. So I'm about to head out of town for a week on a river trip, so I'm looking forward to that, but I got a lot of stuff to get done before I can go. So I hope for those of you in the U.S., you have a great holiday weekend here. And for everyone else, we'll be talking to you soon. Thanks a lot for dialing in and for all your questions. I enjoyed answering. We had lots of great interaction here. It was fun. Okay, that's it. Bye-bye, folks.